The committee will come to order. Transportation Finance Policy, State of Minnesota. And the Committee of Legislative Assistant will note the role as we come and go today. Members, thank you for your attendance and your attention to the approval of minutes. Before we do that, I'm going to turn off my phone because it's not like I'm going to take a call while I'm working with you folks. I encourage you to silence yours if you can. There we go. Minutes. The approval of the minutes. Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, I move we approve the minutes.
The motion is before us, members, to approve the minutes of the March 14th meeting. Boy, we were busy that day, members. I've never seen 10 pages of minutes before. Discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor, signify by aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. First bill on the agenda today is Representative McDonald, House File 1586, Motorcycle Safety Education Programs. Representative McDonald, welcome to the committee. If you'd give it just a moment, we'll find somebody to move your bill to get it before us. And members, the bill would, the next stop would be the Committee on Public Safety. A motion, Representative Szymanski.
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1586 recommended to pass and be sent to Public Safety.
Thank you, Representative Szymanski. Representative McDonald, your bill is before us. If you'd like to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This bill, what it does in a nutshell, is it allows the Commissioner of Public Safety to distribute 50% of the funds that are paid for by motorcycle enthusiasts when they pay an endorsement fee to all schools that will train for public safety for motorcyclists throughout the state of Minnesota. Currently, MinSCU offers this service. I believe they have over 31 programs. They do it very well. They have a curriculum that's strict and is very productive and works, as do six private sector schools who use the same curriculum and do it very well themselves. In 1982, a law was passed here in this office, or in this at the Capitol. I think my father was probably on board at the time, which established a pool of money to help educate and train motorcyclists, keep them safe on the road. It was a great idea. And the money was to be funded by the motorcyclist through a registration fee, an endorsement fee, they call it. In 2003, Department of Public Safety approached MinSCU and said, we would like to expand this program. There's only one private sector school. Let's expand it throughout the whole state, rural areas and metro. Seemed like a good idea. The money's, they said, great. It's, the money is comes from the registration fee, again, the endorsement fee. Shortly after 2003, any funds that went to the private sector stopped, and it all went to MinSCU. Therefore, the big government, MinSCU, got 50% of the funds, and the private sector got zero, making it hard for the private sector, mom and pops, to compete with the public sector. So this bill, what it says is the Department of Commissioner shall reimburse all schools up to 50% of their program, of the enrollment fee. Not just the MinSCU schools, not just the public schools, but all schools, private sector and public sector, working together in harmony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative McDonald, I noticed we have a fiscal note that indicates about $21,000 a year ongoing. Ms. Johnson, can you explain to me what that would be? Is that for rulemaking, or is that the cost of figuring out who else to give the money to? Just speak to it, if you would.
Mr. Chair and members, excuse me. I believe that that was an original fiscal note and not on the engrossment that was since done. Is that correct? And we've since got a preliminary one from DPS indicating zero impact.
Zero impact on the new one. Thank you. That correct. Warms the chairman's heart a little bit. Representative McDonald, do you care to illuminate any further about the fiscal note situation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I concur with your staff.
Thank you. Members, questions for Representative McDonald before we go to a couple testifiers who have asked to speak to the bill? Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald, I understand that this particular piece of legislation would no longer make it permissible for or discretionary for the department to convey these funds, but it would become mandatory. And can you explain why you believe that is a role that we should play when it comes to a state agency deciding based on looking at a program, its criteria, as to whether they should be reimbursed up to 50% of their expenditures?
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Champion, thank you for that question. My thoughts on that, and I'm not alone in this, is that because of the bill's original intent back in 1982 was to educate and train all motorcyclists through all schools, that it is important that the Department of Public Safety shall fund up to 50% to all schools.
Follow-up, Representative Champion.
So can you tell me what happened in the marketplace? Did someone in particular, like private schools, come to you and say, we are not happy about the fact that we don't get any aspect of those grant funds? What happened that is driving your motivation to put forward this proposed legislation?
Representative McDonald, can you speak to the genesis of the bill?
Yes, very good. Thank you, Representative Champion. This was brought to my attention by a constituent who lives in my hometown of Delano, who offers one of the schools at another participating business in Delano. So, naturally, as a state representative who represents Wright County and the city of Delano, I was thrilled to be able to help a constituent. And because of the merits of the bill, I think it's very important that if this fund was originally set up by this body many years ago, to train and educate all public safety motorcyclists to keep us safe on the road, and funded by the motorcyclists themselves, then that should be the intent of the bill. I believe that in over the years that it's changed, and now it's just Minscu having an opportunity to train and with these funds. I think it was an unfair advantage to the private sector and not the original intent of this body.
One last question.
Follow up.
Yes. Representative McDonald, so it sounds to me that there is this assumption that the term schools that is used in your bill on line 1.13 would include but not be limited to K through 12 public schools. It would also seem to include non-public schools, but it would also seem to include for-profit schools and could also include like other driving services, community colleges, etc. And so it appears that if that is the case, that the cost of administration may increase. So can you speak to that, even though I know you said that there is there's zero fiscal impact? Have we taken some analysis to understand if the term school is being expanded and could include others, how that would have some additional expense to it?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Champion, yes, this your question is all schools. No, it's just it would not pertain to K through 12, just Minscu who are offering this program. I understand there might be a little discrepancy in the bill in which it's written. I don't want it to be interpreted that it's all schools, K through 12, and so perhaps that's something that I need to look at as an amendment. But it's just Minscu and other schools.
Thank you. Members, we have... Representative Moore, I'm sorry, were you going to... Because we have a couple testifiers I'd like to bring up and chat for about the bill for a moment. Frank Ernst from Abate. Mr. Ernst, are you here? Testify to the bill. And then I also have Bill Schaefer from Department of Public Safety. Schaefer, calling on you next. Okay, thank you. Mr. Ernst, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the recorded... record and then proceed with your testimony. We'd appreciate that.
Thank you. My name is Frank Ernst. I'm the state coordinator trustee for American Bikers for Awareness, Training, and Education, commonly referred to as ABATE of Minnesota. I'm here today because of some feedback that ABATE of Minnesota has heard. We've been told by many people that it's been said that we support this change. And I want to clear up the record on that. ABATE of Minnesota is not in support of this change. Many of our members and our chapters participate in the rider training program. We've had a great deal of success with the program the way it's currently administered. We were involved in the program years ago when it was all offered by a private party, and quite honestly, the program works really, really well right now, and we would encourage keeping it like it is.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Ernst. Questions for Mr. Ernst before we move on to the next testifier, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the testifier. Do you have any reason to believe, though, if the Harley-Davidson dealer in Delano adopted the same training program to allow for a training program under this new bill to happen and get reimbursement, that the quality would be any worse?
Mr. Ernst?
I can't speak to that. I do not know that it would get worse. Like I say, I just know that we do have very, very good success with the program working the way it is.
Wow. Follow up, yeah. Representative Benson?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I hear that you're not in favor of it, but are you against it? I mean, I have something that says that you're neutral on it, but let's say we did extend it, we saw the quality not go down at all, would it really have that much, make that much a difference to the abate program in Minnesota?
Mr. Ernst.
Mr. Chairman, we have not voted in position of against it. Probably the biggest thing we're against is we're not sure how it was originally stated that we were in support of it, if that was intentionally to be misleading or if it just happened, but we certainly do not support it.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I've been working on this for 2 years, and nowhere on paper or through sound, sight, or any testifier did I know or think that Abate supported this. I was well aware they were neutral in this, so I understand the testifier's concerns, but I've been working on this 2 years, and I knew that Abate was neutral on this, and nor did I never mention that they were supportive of this. Now, if I may continue, I'm surprised a little bit because I know Abate, and I have many in my district. They're great folks, hard workers. They have mom-and-pop businesses like myself, and they're for freedom. They don't want government interfering in their daily lives as much as possible. They like businesses to thrive, the private sector, not governments overtaking. So I'm surprised that they're not for more freedom, especially in the public sector. But I'm willing to work. This is going to go to public safety, and I'm going to be happy to sit down and talk with, actually I had a conversation with Mark Berger just a few moments ago, and he shared his concerns with me, and I'm very excited to meet with him to address some of their concerns.
Before I go to Representative Morrow, Mr. Ernst, the committee is interested to know then if Abate's official position is not in favor of the bill. Is it actually opposed to the bill in its current form? Is that what you're saying?
We have not taken an official position.
So you are officially neutral.
Opposition.
You're officially neutral. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure we understood that. Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McDonald, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take a little offense at what you just said. As an Abate member myself, I don't think that Mr. Ernst is saying anything about freedom pro or con, and I think you're putting words in his mouth. He didn't say he was against private industry. What he said was it started with private schools, and he felt it worked better when it moved to the public schools. And as one who did take this training at South Central College, I'll tell you, Mr. Ernst, it worked well. Now, Representative McDonald, I don't know how I'm going to vote yet on your bill, but I think it's offensive for you to say that he is somehow against freedom because he is simply stating his view that it worked better in one situation than another, and he told you he's neutral. Or at least the organization is neutral. He just came to correct the record that somebody had said they're in favor. Mr. Chair, I do have a question for Representative McDonald. Representative McDonald, looking at line 1.15 of your bill, it says, shall reimburse all schools. So if I hear Mr. Ernst, one of the concerns is about the quality of the education. Will DPS be required to approve a school, or if a school is offering motorcycle safety education, is it thereby entitled to reimbursement? In other words, I don't see where there's going to be approval for the schools, or see, what you've got here is all schools and other approved organizations. So other approved organizations, but it doesn't say the schools have to be approved. Could you explain that disparity to me?
Mr. McDonald, Representative McDonald, can you speak to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Morrow, I have a testifier that I've been working with, that gentleman by the name of Mr. Duncan. I'd like to call him down to help answer your question.
Before we go there, I think there are a couple more questions for this testifier. Do you have a follow-up to this testifier, Representative? Representative Leidinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. Mr. Ernst, I wanted to get something cleared up. Is it a requirement to go through this training course to get an endorsement on your driver's license to ride a motorcycle?
Mr. Ernst?
Adults are not required to take the training. Under 18, I believe, is the requirement that they would need to take this training.
Follow up, Representative Leidinger?
Yes. So if you're 18 or over, it is optional. It would is my understanding. So correct me if I'm wrong on that. But let me move on. But a person does have to take an examination. All people have to take an examination to get that endorsement. Is that correct,
Mr. Ernst?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Everybody has to take an examination.
Representative Leidiger.
Okay, and one last question. Who determines where the funds go? And maybe this is for Representative McDonald. Is it the Department of Public Safety that makes that determination where the so the application goes directly to them, and they make and they fund the they write the check out?
Mr. Ernst or Representative McDonald, I think I see in the current law that it's actually the Commissioner of Education that disperses the funds. But can you speak to that any differently?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, this was at Higher Ed Finance just a week and a half ago, in which we struck the language of the Department of Education. Department of Education was completely on board because they really had nothing to do with this program. They were kind of a middleman, so it no longer is the Department of Education, just the Commissioner of Public Safety.
Well, to be correct, Representative McDonald, if this bill becomes law, it will become public safety. But in current law, it is the Department of Education that disperses those funds, correct?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that is correct.
Thank you for the clarification. Representative Gauthier, I think, is next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is not for the testifier, so I can wait.
Thank you. We'll keep you on the list then. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to be clear on one thing. I know what Representative Morrow was saying. I'm not sure that I heard the testifier say that exact thing. I think he said that it is working fine the way it is, and let's leave it. He did say that. He didn't say it's working better than it was. I just want to make that clear. I think it is working fine. That's one thing. But private sector classes or teachers or courses that are going on are still working as well out there too.
Thank you for your observation. I have two other testifiers on the list, but Representative, did I hear you say you had someone else that you wanted to speak to the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do, if he could answer the questions of the members, if they have one that I am not able to answer.
Give me a name, please.
Mr. Jed Duncan.
Let's hold on to Mr. Duncan's testimony, unless there is specific questions that he can answer. But I do have, what?
I do.
Representative Champion, I'm sorry, I didn't see you on the list. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, so I guess I did hear a little about whether it's working fine now, but I also think I heard you say that you have the institutional capacity as to the way it was running before, when it was largely run by, or the program was administered by those in the private sector. So can you tell me if you feel it's working better or worse than it was before, from your vantage point?
Mr. Ernst, can you speak to that?
Mr. Chairman, I can share my personal opinion on that. I have taken the class, registered for the class, been involved in the classes for quite a number of years, as when it was privately done, as well as when it's being done now through Minsky. And the way the system works today, in my opinion, is far superior to the way it was years ago. This spring, I have had opportunity to register a group of my friends, the writing friends through A-Beta Minnesota, that will be taking the class, as well as another one of my friends that will be taking a beginner's class to gain his endorsement. All that registration was taken care of from the comfort of my easy chair at home, and I got confirmation that it was all done. The payment of it was done online, and it just has worked out very, very well. The instructors that I've been trained by, the rider coaches I've been trained by, have done an excellent job, and I think, in my opinion, probably with less arrogance, if you would, than some of the instructors that I was taught by while it was privately done.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Schaefer, Bill Schaefer, could you come and give us your comments, please? Mr. Schaefer, if you'd identify yourself for the recorded record and proceed with your testimony, we'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Bill Schaefer. I manage the Minnesota Motorcycle Safety Program for the Department of Public Safety.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, representatives, the Department of Public Safety has a motorcycle safety advisory task force comprised of motorcyclists
from a wide spectrum of the riding community. They advise public safety on the operation of the Minnesota Motorcycle Safety Program. They have made a formal recommendation that DPS oppose this bill, and so we are. The motion to oppose passed unanimously with this committee, with this task force. Their concern is that this bill will increase tuition costs, as DPS will have to reduce the amount of our support with our training project with MNSCU if we begin to subsidize other private providers.
Thank you for your comments. Questions to this testifier? Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that the price of the would go up. Why would that happen?
Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Chair, representatives, we currently program every dime we take in for a motorcycle safety program, and we would need to reduce the amount that we currently program with Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
Follow-up, Representative Leidiger.
Are you paid based on, is it a prorate per student? You're getting a flat rate? Or how does that work?
Mr. Schaefer, could you explain that to us?
Mr. Chair, representatives, we pay MNSCU some fees to train and coordinate our instructors. We also pay them a per course rate. For the basic rider course, which is the most popular course in the state and probably 90% of training, we pay MNSCU $320 per basic rider course completed. Enrollment in a basic rider course is 12 students maximum. We probably average around 11 students per course in the basic rider course in our current agreement.
Follow-up, Representative Leidiger. No. Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Leidiger, I think this is probably the crux of the matter, as Mr. Schaefer is describing it. If we pass the bill, and I'm not objecting to the bill, but if we pass the bill, what I'm hearing is the money would be spread to more schools because there would be more schools eligible than appear to be, at least maybe not eligible, but are receiving money. There are private providers right now who are not receiving money, who I think Representative McDonald is trying to make sure they do receive money. That's why it says shall as opposed to may. But when you're taking the same pot of money and you're sending it to more schools, you're sending less to an individual school. So what I've heard from MNSCU in the past as well is because they'd be getting less, they'd either have to cut or charge more because they can't do the same amount with the same money. Mr. Schaefer, do I understand that basic concept correctly?
Mr. Schaefer?
That is correct, Representative.
Follow-up, Representative Morrow?
No, thank you.
To that point, I'm looking in this fiscal note that's no longer relevant, but it does have, members, on page 5, some very useful data that I think would help shed some light on things. One thing that the committee might be interested in is that there is apparently a maintenance contract, Mr. Schaefer, and that apparently this fund also, it's about a $900,000 a year fund, and it also is used to buy training motorcycles. Are those, who takes ownership of those? Are they spread around to the different sites? Can you just give us a brief description of how that works with the equipment being spread around, acquired, who owns it, so on and so forth?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, representatives. Public Safety has contracted to provide this training since 1986. From 86 through 90, we contracted with the Minnesota Institute of Public Health. Mm-hmm. From 1990 through 2002, we contracted with Comprehensive Safety Systems, a private provider, to provide this training. Since all three, we've been working with MNSCU. During that duration, Public Safety has always provided the equipment for the training provider, and so the Department of Public Safety for several years now has owned a fleet of training motorcycles and a fleet of transportation trailers. Currently, there's 350 training motorcycles in that fleet and 25 transport trailers to cover training around the state at the 31 MNSCU campuses that host training.
Can you tell us who actually is responsible for moving that equipment from location to location?
Yeah, the Department of Public Safety has a contract with a hauler to move that equipment, and the Department of Public Safety maintains a contract with a mechanic to maintain the motorcycles, provide repairs during the season, replace motorcycles that get broken at training sites. And in the metro area, that mechanic also makes a weekly service run and fuels all the sites as well.
Thank you. Representative Schimansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As my question deals with on the bill, or actually in the statute or existing, it says the safety education courses can be reimbursed for up to 50% of the cost. Is that typically, do we go to the 50% no matter what the cost is, or is there a cap in that formula somewhere?
Mr. Schaefer?
Mr. Chair, representatives, the statute caps our expenses at 65% of our receipts each year. The statute speaks to paying for the training and coordination of instructors and also reimbursing schools up to the cost. Our agreement with Minsky right now is reimbursing part of their costs and also paying for the coordination and training of the instructors. And that agreement is not at the 65% level. That agreement is right now, this current fiscal year is $385,700 is our current contract.
Follow up? Representative Gauthier, do you want to hold on just a moment yet?
I can go.
Okay, Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McDonald, I'm trying to understand here. You want to open the pot of money to private businesses that are already offering a service and I would assume are making a profit or they wouldn't be in business. And we're being critical of a public program that's working well, according to testimony. I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure why you want to do that. Can you explain that to me again?
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gauthier, thank you. I was very critical in my opening statement when I said that Minsky was offering a program and they do it very well, as does the private sector. As I said originally, the intent of the bill was to have all schools have the ability to train this program for the two-wheeled program. So I think it is only fair that all schools, with the intent of the bill from 1982, have an opportunity to have some of the endorsing fee, which is paid for by the motorcyclist.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald.
Follow-up, Representative Gauthier.
You know, I think I would agree with you if we didn't have finite resources. But clearly we do have finite resources, and why we would undermine a public program that's being successful and doing a good job in moving around the state, to undermine that, to subsidize private enterprise, which is already making money doing the same thing, is just beyond me. You know, I hear a lot about subsidies, and I guess it depends on who you're subsidizing, but this is one that I don't think I can support.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the testifier. Are any of the public safety motorcycles trucked to the private sites to help with their training at all?
Mr. Schaefer, can you speak to that?
Mr. Chair, representatives, no, they are not.
Okay.
Thank
you, Mr. Chairman. So they don't get the motorcycles and they don't get any money. And to the Representative Gauthier's point is that it seems like the state is picking winners and losers in the marketplace rather than allowing for the money that is that comes in to be available to anybody who provides the training. So that's a comment, and I no more questions.
There is a Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up so I'm clarifying. And you know, Representative Benson, I would be with you, especially if we were subsidizing one private entity and sending all public motorcycles to one private business and not another. In this case, we're sending it to a Minsky campus. I understand you might not see a difference in that, although, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have a question at the end. Is this bill going to go to higher ed? Because it hasn't been to higher ed. It's been to education finance. So that will be a question for you. But, Mr. Schaefer, I'm going to go back to page 5 where we were earlier, and I'm reading there are 5 numbered points here on this fiscal note. I don't know, sir, if you have a copy.
I do not.
Here, Bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
And I'm on, Mr. Schaefer, I'm on page 5.
Yes, sir.
And I'm looking at the 5 indented points about where the money is going now. And then I look below in the paragraph that says the statute allows for 65%. On average, we are spending approximately 45% of the funding available to us each year. if this bill were to become law, would it stay 45%, do you predict, on training and coordinating instructors?
Mr. Schaefer?
Mr. Chair, representatives, I believe so, because there are so many other outlays in this program, including equipment, maintaining equipment, and public safety also conducts an educational campaign to support motorcycle safety throughout the year.
Follow-up, Representative Morrill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schaefer, there, I want to follow up on Representative Benson's question then. If other schools are, if you have to make contracts with other schools upon passage of this bill, would you need to send equipment to those other schools as well?
Mr. Schaefer?
I do not know that. I would assume possibly, but I don't know if we would or not. But I assume if it's a level playing field, that indeed we would, and we would need to purchase a significant amount more of equipment.
Follow-up?
Just one more. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just ask about, there are four other items here that are listed. I looked at the equipment. How about mechanical services? Would you need to provide mechanical services to each provider?
Mr. Schaefer, perhaps in answering that question, you can, if you can, educate the committee on when our equipment and maintenance became part of the rubric here, instead of just having training programs that people would presumably bring their own equipment to. Yeah, were you aware of when that changed and how that worked, Mr. Schaefer?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have real early history on this, but I know when we contracted with Comprehensive Safety Systems, starting in 1990 through 2002, part of that contract required that they provided the maintenance for Department of Public Safety's fleet of motorcycles. We did run into some service difficulties with that contract, which is why we changed and sought out Minscu as a provider. And at that time, the Department of Public Safety thought we would be better off to contract directly for mechanical services, because one of the problems we had had was our contractor at that time, Comprehensive Safety, was unable to keep a mechanic on staff the last couple years they had the contract. And so our equipment suffered. We had more breakdowns, less operable motorcycles for the courses.
Follow-up? Are we good? There is also Joan Rasmussen from South Central College. Ms. Rasmussen, are you here? Would you like to speak about the bill? Please, thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Mr. Schaefer, you had a closing comment, and then don't go far. We may have more questions for you.
Yes, sir. Just one clarification on some testimony I heard earlier. Since this statute is passed, Department of Public Safety has administered this fund. The statute provided the opportunity to send money to the Department of Education to reimburse schools. Public Safety and Education, when this statute passed, determined that Public Safety would just administer this program. I don't have details on the history, but Public Safety has always administered this program and hasn't dispersed any of the funding to education since it's been around.
Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. Ms. Rasmussen, if, welcome to committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Joanne Rasmussen. I'm with South Central College in North Mankato, and I'm also the Rider Training Project Manager for the state of Minnesota. We were contacted in 2003 by the Department of Public Safety to provide a statewide motorcycle program at a reasonable cost. Today, we do training at 31 locations across the state. The fee for the basic rider course is $160, and that fee has not increased within the last 6 years. This is not an open enrollment course. I mean, this is an open enrollment course. It is not a credit course. Credit courses do get reimbursed. We do not. And because of the cost effectiveness of our program, we are capable to do that training statewide, which also means we were able to contract with the Minnesota Army National Guard. And the reason they contracted with us is because the soldiers then do not have to travel to different locations, probably going as far as 6 hours to get the training, and then they end up making excuses like the cat's best friend died, you know. So anyway, so they were very happy to do the contract with us. None of them have to drive more than within 1 hour distance. If this bill passes, I'm deeply concerned about the cause and effect it will have on the statewide motorcycle program. I'm also concerned about the students who live in East Grand Forks, who live in Eveleth, who live in International Falls, and how are they going to get the training that they need. We have had a very great contract with the Department of Public Safety, And before 2003, they approached us because the private party was not able to meet the capacity at which the program needed to be. So we have the capacity to train 12,000 individuals, and again, we do have the 31 sites. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, and I beg you to consider the cost to the consumers and also the motorcycle enthusiasts of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rasmussen, for your testimony. Members, are questions for Ms. Rasmussen at all? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's that last point I think we should underscore. We haven't been talking so much about that. I mean, that's ultimately the issue. It has kept the cost low for the average person seeking this training. And that, I think, is, you know, as we look at this, one of the considerations I would think that we should have.
Thank you for your comment. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In reference to Representative Benson, I don't think it's about picking winners and losers. I think it's about public policy. And the state of Minnesota has made a determination to keep lows down, and public safety is an issue with this training. Now, if a business is in this providing services and they're not making money, I think the market would say they should go out of business. And so you can't really have it both ways. So this is really about public policy, because we do have private vendors who are making a living providing this service. So why we would subsidize that and increase their profit is beyond me.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify about this bill, for, against, or about? I've got just a few people on the list here. We've accomplished those. Sir, you would like to speak about it, if you would? Ms. Rasmussen, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
If you'd like to stay in the audience for a few minutes, we're going to have a little more chat about this bill, then move it along. Sir, please come down here and identify yourself for the record to the committee. Your name and who you represent, if you have.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Jed Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
I live in St. Paul. Not that that means anything, but
it helps to identify you for the record.
Organization coming from out of state here. So, to address a couple issues we heard already, mm-hmm. and I respect all these concerns, especially that related to quality. Currently, the school is to deliver motorcycle training, and I believe it was you, Representative Champion's concern.
I'll try to address the chair, Mr. Sorry. Duncan, if you would, please.
I'm sorry, Chairman.
That's better, right? I know that's new to you, but that's kind of the way we do this. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Yeah, please.
Mr. Chairman, committee. Mm-hmm. Approved schools are defined as something that isn't K through 12 or college or private organization. It could be any of those. Approved means you have the approval of the Department of Public Safety, and you deliver an approved curriculum. Currently, Motorcycle Safety Foundation curriculum is used in 48 states in the country. That's what we used here. So an approved school is a vague term there. But it's somebody that isn't just opening up off the street, putting a sign up and saying, come to my motorcycle school. That's not how we operate. And when it comes to quality, I understand it's difficult for Mr. Chairman, you and your members to get a grasp of that. There's much bigger fish to fry today out there in terms of what is a good school, what's a bad school. Mm-hmm. I'm a self-interested party. I can't say anything, but there's others that are self-interested. What I would rather do is submit a letter from the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, a respected training professional in the National Guard.
If you would hand that to the page, he'll bring it to the chair.
Sir, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan.
Major Jim Shirk has attended both Minsku and Rider Academy. Mm-hmm. The letter you'll read writes eloquently and flowingly about the quality job performed at Rider Academy. That does not say in any way, shape, or form it isn't a quality product at Minsku. I've been lucky to work with some of the people in this room in various aspects. I've been doing this since 2000. Again, we're lucky here in Minnesota that we have such a program. But that right there is an unbiased opinion. And if we go to mathematical numbers, I apologize. I have a degree in economics and math. Ms. Rasmussen commented that the National Guard benefits from training all over the state. I do not disagree. However, in 2008, 2009, we delivered the training to the National Guard. And we trained more than double the number of people that Minsku is. Soldiers might have had to drive, but they were driving to Camp Ripley. Soldiers already drive to Camp Ripley on a frequent and routine basis. I slept at Camp Ripley in 2008, 18 nights to deliver that training. So that answers the one question. Mr. Chairman, we also heard some concerns about the price. of training. The best way I think I can answer that is to look to our neighboring state, Wisconsin. I know we're not the same, but we do have a very similar demographic population, a very similar population size, and a very similar motorcycle population size. Wisconsin is a bit bigger, but under 10% bigger. So if you give me the latitude, we'll lump that together. We also have a very similar climate. Motorcycle training does not go on in Wisconsin in the winter. But in Wisconsin, the least expensive basic course you can get is $235. That's about 50% more than Minsku. Basic economics would then dictate, as you move higher on the supply curve, demand would go down because it prices people out of the market. But again, I'll gladly mock the economists in the room because I'm one of them, and economics doesn't always work. So in Wisconsin, despite the fact that public training costs considerably more, they're funding much less dollars from Wisconsin DOT, they're spending less on it, and then there's a whole bunch more schools that are open. It's easier to compete. What does that result in Wisconsin? They had over 10,000 riders trained in the basic rider course at less expense to Wisconsin DOT. Minnesota, we're seeing 7,000 for that number, 6,500, the numbers go up and down. So while the price is one fundamental aspect of a consumer making a choice, it isn't the only aspect. Again, large difference in price doesn't necessarily reflect quality, nor does it reflect supply or demand. If it did, you would go to states like Illinois and Ohio and see that the training only costs $25. Well, how can that be? Instructor pay is more for that per hour. Well, the reason why is the funding is coming from somewhere else. Other states, there's no funding, or all the schools are funded, and you see a price between $250 and $300. That's what it costs to deliver a basic rider course, which is the same curriculum used in 48 states, here in Minnesota, using the same instructors oftentimes. And so again, price is not the only thing out there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Duncan, thank you for your comments. Questions for this testifier, members? Questions, comments? Anyone else in the audience want to testify for or about this bill? Seeing no one else, and the members, wrap up questions or comments for Representative McDonald. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I am going to again ask about sending this to higher ed. It seems that there's a direct Minsku budgetary impact here. But I will ask Representative McDonald. Representative McDonald, back to line 1.15, I think you need to at least seriously consider moving the word approved in that sentence. And maybe I'm just being very analytical, but it just says all schools. It doesn't say all approved schools. And if I hear Mr. Duncan correctly about being open to the idea of being an approved school, that would be a recipient. So it seems that you need to look at that. But then if you make that decision, then there's some ramifications you got to think through. So I'm not going to move an amendment, but I think you've got a problem there that needs to be fixed. And Mr. Chair, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you for your comments and suggestions, Representative Morrow. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you're pondering that, Representative McDonald, moving on to the next committee, also ask you to ponder seriously the words of our colleague, Representative Gauthier, all right, who said that there are private organizations that are doing this and doing a good job and making money. I have a fundamental principle, and I know you share it for the most part, is that government should not compete with the private sector when the private sector has proven perfectly capable of delivering a product or service. So ponder that also as this moves forward.
Thank you for your comments. Further questions, comments? Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, as you're pondering those things, please also ponder my comments or our discussion on line 1.13, which talks about schools and how you narrow that so that, you know, it would be consistent with what your thoughts are. But I do agree with Representative Biskins as well.
Yes, my 12-year-old was up riding the electric bike at my house this weekend. I'm sure he'd love to be at junior high having this program, but I don't think that's your intention, Representative McDonald. So, committee, thank you for your suggestions to the author of this bill as it makes its journey. Representative Morrow, to your point, I know that my instructions are to move it to public safety next. I certainly think the author should have a discussion with the chair of higher ed, see if he thinks it's important to go there. It certainly could be brought up on the floor as well. But I'm sure the author has heard the concerns and will be taking those into account as the bill moves forward. Anyone else in the audience? Seeing no one else, Representative Szymanski renews his motion that we didn't amend this bill, did we? So this bill, we recommend to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. You're on your way to public safety with work to do. Thank you, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Representative Banyan, if you'd like to come down and have a small chat about private-public partnerships, that is something I think the committee would like to talk about. And, oh, Representative McDonald, while you're still in the room, the letter from Mr. Duncan might be useful at public safety. I'd recommend you make copies for the committee. We have a copy here if you'd like. And members, if you'd like a copy of the letter, please call Mr. Nisley, and he will make it available to the committee members. We may do that anyhow. Good suggestion. Representative Banyan, welcome to the committee. We'll have somebody move your bill, and this bill is going to the General Register should it pass our muster here. So that would be the motion somebody would like to make for House File.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House File 2473 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Murray. Representative Banyan, welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee, for hearing House File 2473 today. We all know that we live in a time that's challenged in terms of resources generally. Funding for roads never seems, and bridges never seems to be quite what we'd like it to be. I think that's true throughout history, in fact, but it seems more true these days. And so what I'm bringing to you today is an opportunity to think about putting together and authorizing Department of Transportation to engage in three pilot projects, up to three pilot projects for what I'll call P3 rather than have to say a public-private partnership every time, because I'm bound to get tongue-tied at some point during this testimony. This authorizes the commissioner to select mechanisms that are best for the state. It can include a variety of mechanisms. Let me point out that this bill isn't specifically to toll facilities, although toll facilities would be possible under this. Certainly, don't want to misrepresent this, but this allows in section one will allow build, operate, transfer. Or build, transfer, and operate types of agreements, if those should be desired. One particular issue that we have in central Minnesota is the connection between I-94 and US 10. There has been long a plan for an expressway to travel between the two highways as you make your way, we usually think of it as making your way toward the northwest out of the Twin Cities. For my constituents who live in the southeast side of St. Cloud, if you stay on I-94 past the exit at Clearwater, you have to pretty much wind your way through St. Augusta, through the old St. Cloud Township, and around into southeast St. Cloud. It takes about 15 minutes to do that. In contrast, if you decide to go over Highway 24 and then switch over to Highway 10 on that road, that's a two-lane road. It's not particularly on weekends. It's pretty busy. So there has been in plans for some time a desire for some type of expressway that travels between those two. This mechanism would be one way in which we could think about specifically that project, which currently seems to be languishing deep in the queues of transportation, something long wished for and never seems to get close to reality. There are restrictions on this program. So for example, we cannot have builders or financiers coming in to offer to roads directly. It will be up to MnDOT to solicit projects. It must use a selective, competitive process. It cannot agree to any non-compete clauses. And at the end of the day, the facility is supposed to come back to the state. So there are factors involved in this bill. There's a list of considerations that you can have in selecting a public entity for one of these P3s. And then Section 5 authorizes the use of federal funds or other funds that might be available to execute one of these P3s or bring additional money from other sources into the process, if you like. And then there is a reporting requirement in Section 6 that will tell you all, that will come back to this committee and to its relevant counterpart in the Senate to tell you what types of agreements have been entered into with specific information, as you'll see in the bill. And with that, before I conclude, you should have a letter co-signed by David Oxley, Executive Director of the American Council of Engineering Committees, and Doug Weiser, its Legislative Committee Chair, in support of House File 2473. Members, I ask for your support, and I stand for questions.
Members, you see the ACEC letter and have heard the comments of the bill author. Questions, Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so what we're basically talking about here from reading the brief on this, we're talking about toll roads. Is that what I'm getting this? Or am I getting that right, Representative Banya?
Representative Banya.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, there are a variety of ways in which one could envision a process by which one collects. They could be tolls, including just the toll booths, but you could also use mechanisms such as we currently have for high occupancy lanes, for HOVs, and for sort of dynamic lanes that we have currently existing in Minnesota.
Thank you. Follow up, Representative Nelson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Currently, it's my understanding, and maybe this has changed, but that the local cities that these go through have the ability to opt out of having a toll road, because we have the ability in statute to do toll roads, but we have the local authorities can say, no, I don't want a toll road in my community. Would this override that part of statute that we currently have, or would men not be able to come in and put this in and say we're going to put a toll roll, dynamic pricing, however you want to call it, it's a toll roll by any other name. Would they be able to do this over the objection of the local unit of government?
Representative Banyan, I know that in expounding on Representative Nelson's question, that I think the min pass lanes in particular, which is a tolling technique, requires specific legislative action to permit them to happen, in addition to, I think, the local municipality has to assent as well. Perhaps if it's off the interstate system, I'm not clear, but we've got public safety, or I'm sorry. Mr. Peterson, can you think about that? And I'll ask you that question in just a moment, okay, to clarify that. Representative Banning, if you want to walk through that as well.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nelson, I'm unaware of the particular piece of statute you're speaking to. Maybe if House Research should have some thoughts on that, but I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you about that.
Representative Nelson, it's a good question for the information of the committee. If you'd hold the thought, we'll let Mr. Peterson give me a signal when he has an answer, and we'll have him down and speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. The other question.
Follow up.
The other question I had was about the non-compete, and you said this is not going to have a non-compete clause. I know. Earlier, we've seen some of this where they wanted to have, in some places in the country where they've built some of these public-private partnership toll facilities, they've been unable to, if MnDOT, in our case, wanted to build a road that goes in the same direction, they were banned from doing that because of non-compete clauses that were in some of these agreements. But my question about that, because I remember when they did 610, when they first started talking about that when I first got here, there were some people, I mean, the cities of Maple Grove or Brooklyn Park and up that way had, over the years, bought up property knowing this road was going to go through there. And when we were just about at this point to getting it built, all of a sudden they wanted a public-private partnership and they wanted to put a toll road up there and they wanted to go over the objections of both Maple Grove and Brooklyn Park. And the rest of the freeway system was built without those. A lot of these two cities put a lot of their own money into buying us up this property so it was available, the right-of-way was available, and then they wanted to stick them with the toll road. So I want to know the answer to that question. It's because I do not like toll roads. The dynamic pricing that we do on some of the same lanes makes some sense, but to start building toll roads in this state, we've had a long time been against doing that in the state of Minnesota.
Now you can respond if you wish, Mr. Banyan, and we'll just take them as comments towards your bill. And it doesn't look like Mr. Peterson's ready to talk to us yet. Representative Gauthier, I think you're next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Nelson covered the territory, so I'm going to pass.
Thank you. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Banyan, you mentioned toll roads as one of the options. You've got a couple in here in addition. I'm trying to understand the range of funding sources that your legislation would envision. So one is toll roads. What are the other funding mechanisms that your bill would allow?
Representative Banyan.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, there are other ways to think about how, I mean, the point being, we have ways in which the builders of these roads could receive payment back. They could operate a toll themselves. They could operate perhaps the dynamic pricing and HO. So you could imagine, for example, rather than thinking about the 94-10 interchange, think about another lane on I-94 being built alongside by a private entity. That private entity would then be able to, say, use the MinPass system, and in so doing then send the money back to the builder rather than having the builder operate the pricing system along that dynamic lane. Maybe that lane's wide open at 10 in the morning, but priced to be relatively expensive at 5 in the afternoon. I mean, so there are a variety of ways in which that process can be done.
Follow-up, Representative Morrow?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding this because I have a potential amendment in mind here. So I hear toll roads, something dynamic pricing along the, maybe something along the MinPass route of having one lane in which you pay, maybe all the time, maybe part of the day, the dynamic process. Is there any other funding? It says mechanisms the commissioner may consider include, but are not limited to, toll facilities, BOT, or BTO. And I'm just wondering if there's anything else before I offer my amendment that you have in mind.
Representative Banyan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, I don't have any in my head right this second, so perhaps we should hear what your amendment is.
I think we will, Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Morrow.
I think if Mr. Pearson is correct, ready, because I think we need to answer the tolling question.
Let's.
And 160.85 probably gets them started.
Mr. Peterson, thank you for being a resource to us. Can you come down and stand for a question or two? Of the clarifying sort, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Scott Peterson from the MnDOT Government Affairs Office. And I think it was Representative Nelson raises a question about what we have referred to as kind of the municipal veto with respect to toll provisions, and that provision would remain in effect with this bill.
So there is municipal veto then, to be clear. Thank you. Representative Moore, you had a question for him as well?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm reading subdivisions 2 and 3 of 160.85. And, Mr. Peterson, I'm just trying to understand, can you build a toll road anywhere in Minnesota, or does it have to be in the metropolitan area?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moore, I guess I would imagine if this bill were passed, you could build a toll road anywhere in Minnesota with the appropriate approvals. Right now, there is a kind of blanket prohibition against toll roads that's in statute, which is repealed or doesn't, not applicable to the provisions of this bill.
It's an interesting question, Representative Morrow asked, Mr. Peterson, because the two, soon to be three, I believe, are all on that we have authorized or will are on interstate highways. Would it be possible to build one on, say, Highway 62, which is a state highway, or U.S. 52, which is a U.S. federal highway? Are we precluded from doing that if we had municipal assent and legislative approval?
Mr. Chairman, no, we're not necessarily prohibited from doing it by law, but I think financially, the attractiveness of a proposal like this or an agreement like this would be that there'd be sufficient traffic to generate some kind of revenue, or there'd be sufficient roadside development for other types of financing to be available.
Thank you for clarifying. Right, follow-up, Representative Morrill.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I'll ask you a question first. Do we have other testifiers on your list?
We do, yes.
Okay. I'll wait till we hear the other testifiers.
Perhaps. And then I've got Representative Benson wanting to speak to this question before we get to Mr. Hauslauden.
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Peterson or Representative Banyan, you know, I know that the projects like this take some time if they're going to be state-owned and state-developed and built and so on. So there's a good possibility this is already on a 20-year plan, or 30-year plan, or something of that nature. I'm curious of whether or not there, and I certainly wouldn't advocate for this being an amendment to your bill, but if I look at the future value of things, and if we could do this as a private bridge road at this point, but then as we pass bonding bills or it comes up, with the possibility of including something that would allow for the state, in essence, to take over that same road without having to reconstruct anything new, or with the idea that, of course, the person who took the risk to build the road is going to need to be remunerated for that. Is that in the realm of possibilities?
Representative Banyan?
Okay. Thank you. I think it is, Mr. Chairman and Representative Benson. I mean, remember that the purpose of using these P3s is in part to move the risk of building a road that turns out, or a bridge that turns out not to have great value, moving it off of the taxpayers and onto investors and let them take the risk instead. If it turns out that the investment was a good one, mm-hmm. Then I could imagine the state coming forward at that point saying, well, the road has proven its value. We'd like to offer you the balance of what you're due on this at this time, perhaps with something. You could do that in the terms of a bonding bill. And I mean, again, the purpose of this is to just think about doing things in a more business-like approach. When you travel on private roads, they tend to be oriented toward the consumer a little bit more. We've seen that happen with the 91 freeway out in the Los Angeles area, for example, which actually developed dynamic pricing to the extent they call it perfect pricing. That would be an example of where they've really tried to manage the road in a way that is best for the citizens of the Los Angeles basin.
Follow up?
You might.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, I agree largely with what Representative Banyan said, that these agreements can take many forms, which have many sets of terms that could be used for reconveyance or conveyance of the facility to the public ownership. And I think his bill actually foresees a circumstance where it says that basically all types of agreements that would be enacted under these provisions would eventually have to transfer back to public ownership at some point. And this follow up a little bit to the 20-year statement. The project that's called out in the bill here, actually the environmental impact statement is complete on that, and so the timeline on which that could be completed would be relatively quickly compared to some other projects that might come forward because that work has been done.
Thank you. I have two other testifiers who would like to speak to the bill, but I do have Representative Champion who would ask to be recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief question to Representative Banyan. I see on lines 1.7 and 1.17 and 1.18 that you identify a specific highway and interstate. So I want to know, number one, how'd you come up with that with this particular project? And two, whether you have any information that would lead you to believe that there's an interest by the local government or the local municipality to want to go forward with this sort of mechanism.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Champion, great question. That area is an area that still falls under the school district that covers St. Cloud as well. I can tell you that the school district has not within the last 10 years purchased land for the possible expansion of its school system to have another elementary school in the area. There were at times annexation guidelines for Haven Township that are still in the process of being moderated, so being modified and looked at now, since the housing boom that was going on earlier in the last decade has obviously hit the rocks. But that's an area that has long been thought to be an area where expansion would likely occur. And I would go back to my previous comments, Representative Champion, that southeast side of St. Cloud currently, if you want to get to that part of town east of the river, I-94 doesn't serve you terribly well, and Highway 10 has a lot of stoplights on it. And so a lot of people try to do this, to take two-lane roads to sort of snake back in there, and as a matter of safety as well as convenience, I think they would be better served by a limited access highway.
Thank you. Members, just a little housekeeping. We have a couple of handouts. One is which myths and facts about transportation. Can somebody admit to who handed this out? Oh, Mr. Houseladen. Okay, he's going to testify in a moment. Good deal. We did look at it. It was relevant and pretty straightforward, but usually I like to have just a heads up. So thank you. It was one of our testifiers. Mr. Peterson, did you want to comment to that before I call Mr. Houseladen down? To Mr. Champion's question.
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thanks. I will just point out to members that the governor has assembled a task force to look at alternative transportation financing. The members from the House are Representative Morrow and myself, and we're looking forward to some good work over the interim on that committee. And I have a hunch we'll be talking about this method of financing as well going forward. Just, oh, by the way, for housekeeping. Representative Houseman.
I thought, Mr. Chair, that that he looked as though he wanted to add one other thing, but it wasn't in direct response to your question. I didn't know if there was additional testimony that the department wanted to offer for the record.
Mr. Peterson, do you have something else that shed a little light on this discussion as we're moving forward?
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I was going to add was in reference to the work by the task force that you already brought up, and that there were some key items that were brought up in the course of that task force's work that I think are good ideas in terms of building public confidence in these types of agreements and their acceptance among the general public, that they actually are in the public interest whenever something like this is concluded. And basically it revolves around having in a kind of a third party oversight group that would ensure that, you know, provide some objective assurance that the terms of the agreement are truly in the public interest, and that that would oversee a financial analysis that would also further confirm that the use of the revenues and the distribution of the revenues between the private and public parties are, again, apportioned appropriately, and the public interest is well protected in the agreement.
Thank you for your comment. Representative Gauthier, you were on the list. Do you need to comment now, or you want to wait for Mr. Slide?
It's for Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Peterson, if you'd hold on just a second. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, could you just tell us how we pay for highways now, construction of highways?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gauthier, the state highways are funded from three primary state revenue sources, gas taxes, tab fees, and the motor vehicle sales tax, and then also a significant portion comes from the Federal Highway Trust Fund, which is paid for by gas taxes.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gauthier.
Mr. Peterson, just being a northern boy, when we have these lanes for during the heightened traffic and you use your Metro Pass or drop a toll or whatever, do you think people think they're paying for convenience and speed, or do you think they're paying for the highway? What do you think the public thinks? Because I know how it was sold.
Mr. Peterson, you're welcome to take a stab at that if you'd like.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gauthier, I'm not very good at reading minds, but in our survey work, it appears to us that the people who use our MinPass lanes are paying for the reliability and the opportunity to avoid being stuck in traffic. So the reliability of their trip times is one of the primary things.
Representative Gauthier, just to follow up, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Peterson, because I think that's what they think. And so basically, Representative Banyan, your bill really is opening up a whole new can of worms. You know, And I'm just thinking of Joe Public, who's going down the interstate, and all of a sudden they're going to get on a toll road. And they're probably going to be, and this is more of a comment, and you can respond if you want. They're going to be thinking, why am I paying for this again? I've already paid with it for my gas tax, my motor vehicle tax, and I didn't ask for a convenient highway like a Metro Pass, but now all of a sudden I got a toll road I got to pay for. I mean, how do you get past that public perception?
Members, the chair is having a flashback. I'm sure Representative Nelson is here with me, too. 10 years ago, whenever the MinPass project was in front of us, and we had these same questions, same comments. Good questions and good comments all that every legislature needs to visit. Representative Vanning, you can comment if you wish. Otherwise, I would like to ask Mr. Houselodden up here, who's probably going to answer the very questions Representative Gottfried just asked. So. Mr. Peterson, thank you for your information.
I'll make it back to you.
Mr. Houselodden, welcome to the committee, and you know the drill.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Houselodden, and I'm president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. And I want to apologize that we didn't indicate that we were the author of the one handout there on the myths and facts. We want to talk a bit about that. I do want to thank you for the opportunity to what today is hopefully just the beginning of a dialogue regarding the role of public-private partnerships, also called P3s, because I agree that's quite a mouthful to say repeatedly. And as we expressed to Representative Banning in private discussions, we do support his desire to improve Minnesota's road and bridge infrastructure, and in the most efficient and cost-effective manner possible. So to that end, we look forward to continuing our discussions on how to address the state's transportation needs. However, we have very serious concerns about the approach taken in House File 2473, and we strongly oppose the bill. We believe that House File 2473 is fundamentally a tolling program. If you think about it, the only way that private firms can recoup their initial investment plus a profit margin is to toll. And as you've already noted, this runs counter to the current policy of the state as well as the public's opinion towards tolling. And back in 2008, when we last increased our fuel tax, that's part of the debate we had about we would increase the fuel tax but make sure that tolling was something we didn't do. So the legislature in its wisdom put language in that prohibited tolling on existing general purpose lanes. And while P3s have a lot of conceptual appeal, especially for states that are looking for more transportation funding, in practice, P3s rarely work out well. And the handout that we gave you goes into some of those details. Based on the limited P3 instances we have in the U.S., we can say a few things. First, they don't really bring in new money to the state, but they're effectively a loan against future revenue. Second, to ensure private sector interest, and this is very important, privatized roads require exclusive access and significant traffic volumes. Third, there is rarely any public input regarding rate setting, which is critical to the users, and most P3 leases have been negotiated behind closed doors. Again, this is what we're seeing across the country. Four, they are costly to administer. The data shows us that public toll facilities eat up 25 to 30% of toll revenue for administration alone. Now, private toll roads will add a profit margin on top of this. Now, compare that to the State Fuel Tax Administration, which costs us about 2 to 3%. And current P3 projects nationally are performing poorly and will likely suffer from lower maintenance. So just one example. We need look no farther than the Macquarie Private Investment Group. Perhaps you've heard their name. Macquarie has the three U.S. P3 facilities, high-profile ones, including the Chicago Skyway and the Indiana Toll Road. They were found to be so far underwater, with estimated debt and liabilities exceeding assets by billions of dollars, that in the fall of 2010, Macquarie shareholders forced the firm to spin off its P3 toll group as nearly a bankrupt, junk bond quality boutique. It wasn't working well. And apparently the U.S. Senate agrees with this assessment. In its version of the Federal Highway Bill passed just last week, there is a provision that was added that would deduct any P3 road miles from the federal reimbursement calculation. And lastly, this legislation vastly expands the scope and authority of the Minnesota Department of Transportation with what we believe is inadequate oversight, which could put Minnesota on a fast track to statewide implementation of tolling. So for all of these reasons, we urge the committee to lay the bill over for interim review and discussions. This is a big issue. We're just starting it. We respectfully make that suggestion to the committee, and I thank you for your time and stand ready for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Houselodden, for your testimony. Members, are there questions for Mr. Houselodden at all? Thank you. If you'd stay close by just in case. And Mr. Neumeister, you'd indicated you wanted to say a few kind words about the bill as well. Or a few words about the bill.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. With the bill being heard today, our inertia is pushing for this bill. It already has made deadline on the Senate side, I take it. But when I saw this and I read the bill, some of the points that were already been made by the previous speaker and Mr. Peterson is the word public confidence, public process, public ability to scrutinize and find if the actions of their government are accountable. I just point out some things in the bill that I think, if this bill is going to go forward, needs some more discussion. What is the 3P procurement method? I don't know what that is. And also, Mr. Chairman, I don't see that defined. On page 1 on 10, notwithstanding Minnesota statutes or any other law to the contrary. I'm very always familiar with that notwithstanding. Those are one of those little trick words in process that all of a sudden, oops, did we do that last year? And I think that's important to find out to where that is. But one of the other things on line 23 is, and it gets back to the public scrutiny and accountability. If we take a look, I'll say historically, MnDOT has been very proud of its public accountability, public scrutiny. So, and I just, with MnDOT representatives last week on an issue of subcontracting, if the public wants to look at their subcontracts, it was very clear that it seems from their policy, the public can look at those subcontracts. But one on line 23, commissioner shall select a private entity, two words on 23, competitive basis. So what in the law are they, what of the methods of competitive basis are they using it so that the public can eventually look at all the data, all the proposals, and what does it mean by the maximum extent possible? So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I just share a few points of view on that, particularly also when I asked Mr. Banyan how this new scheme, in a neutral sense scheme, not in a negative sense, but if the new scheme implemented, how would the Data Practices Act comply with? Because under current law, there are some ways under MnDOT where information is public, and I don't know how this new 3P will fit into that, to the data practices scheme. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the few moments of your time.
Appreciate your comments. Questions for Mr. Neumeister? Members, we've had a good discussion on this bill. It just seems to the committee that this is a very big subject. It's going to be touched on at length in the interim by the task force the governor has asked some of us to serve on. So, Mr. Murray, with your assent, I'd like to just lay this bill over and not recommend that it go to the general register. Unless there's other compelling discussion, members, the chair is going to lay over House File 2473, and if we need to take it up again a further date, we'll post it, notify you, and take it up again. But with that, the bill is laid over. Members, next on the agenda item number 6, consideration of the committee bonding recommendations. In your packet and posted last week, I think Friday morning, Mr. Nisley posted the committee bonding recommendations that we referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Members, we did not put dollar amounts in them, and we did not necessarily rank them, but these are the ones that received the well over a majority of the committee votes, and these are the ones we'll forward on. This is not an assurance that they will be included in any bonding bill that Chairman Howes may put together, but at least he has an indication of our interest in which ones we would like to see go forward from here. And with that, the chair will stand for questions. Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, we've done this a little differently in different committees, so I just want to be clear. So What we'd be voting on is this list that's before us of the, I think it's 8 items, and this committee would send those 8 items to Chair Howe's committee?
Correct. Yes. Again, without ranking and without dollar amounts, these are the ones we would like him to put a place in his bonding bill as he's assembling it. A follow-up, Representative Morrill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So has Representative House put together his bill then? Or you say he's putting it together?
He is putting it together, yes.
Thank you.
He's putting it together. Let me leave it at that. So, yes. Representative Hausman.
I don't know if there were other questions. I was a little confused about the timing because I happen to be on that committee as well. And my understanding is that in about a half an hour, if it hasn't already, that spreadsheet will be available to the press because we already have it.
Good.
So, right now I actually have the Representative Howe spreadsheet, and so I'm wondering whether the committee has had any opportunity for...
Representative Hausman, the committee as a whole, probably not. Representative House told me he wanted these by Wednesday or Thursday last week, or he was going to give me a big fat zero. I said, I don't think so. I think it'll be there Friday. I think the discussion in the leadership corner was no, Friday would be sufficient. These were posted at noon on Friday, Mr. Nisley, is that correct? At noon or 1 o'clock on Friday, and they were transmitted to the committee administrator of the bonding committee, so he knows our indications. It's not the chair's intention to alter or modify these today. I'm basically asking the committee just to ratify the list that's already been sent to Representative House. I have not been party to the list that you might have there, but my full expectation is that Mr. House, Representative House, Chairman House would have heard our recommendations from Friday and had some accommodation for particularly the GO portion of our bonding suggestion. So, further questions or comments, members, I'm looking forward to seeing what Mr. House has to say to our deal, but we'll wait for his official paperwork to come down the pike here shortly. Representative Morrill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hear what you're saying, but I'm also looking now at this list that Chairman House has already put out. And on his list, members, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 different things. Not 8, but 14. Hmm. And of those...
But only 6 funded.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. He didn't... Let me go back to the funded ones. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You go ahead.
Okay.
Representative Hausman knows it better than I do.
Well, Mr. Representative Morrill and Representative Hausman, the list is not public. The chair doesn't have it. My committee administrator doesn't have it. We're just trying to find the timeline that was set by the leadership corner. We forwarded our stuff by noon or 1 o'clock on Friday, and we're just here to ratify our list now and make it kind of a public deal. And that's all I can tell you today. I can't speak to what he's done or what that list might say until I actually have the official copy in my hand. So. Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm not going to...
Excuse me. Representative Morrill.
I know. I'm not... I don't feel... Mr. Chair, I feel like you think I'm busting your chops. I'm really not trying to.
I understand.
It's a little distressing that we're voting on a list,
yes.
And there's a different list in the chairman's bill. There's some overlap, and I respect that you may have been put in a position that you didn't want to be in, but I'm just saying, members, we're about to vote on a list, but there's already a list in the chairman's bill. So I'm just wondering, are you going to advocate then after today for this list, or is this the list?
Representative Morrow, if this committee endorses the list that was put together by this committee process, I will advocate for this list. So thank you for making me aware that the chairman of the bonding committee apparently has something he's put together, but I will be going to see him about this list if this is the one the committee wishes to put together, because I'm the chairman of this committee and you are members of this committee, and that's my job, is to advocate for this committee's work. The chair moves that we recommend the list that's in front of you, these 8, the chairman of the bonding committee notwithstanding, and that we recommend these, and I'll take it down there and advocate for them forcefully. Further discussion to this list. Thank you for making me aware of that. I appreciate it. Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The chair will go see the chair, and we'll have a chat about the 8 recommendations of this committee. Thank you for your attention to these matters. Members, is there anything else to come before us today?
Yeah.
Seeing none, our next committee meeting will be Wednesday, usual time, usual place. With that, members, we are adjourned.